I'm Megan Segura.
And I'm Eric J. Mack.
And this is The Daily Dish, Bravo's official podcast.
So, Megan, you already gave me the warning that you're feeling a little under the weather today.
Yeah, for anyone out there who gets migraines, I started feeling the auras like 30 minutes ago. So I warned Eric I might say something crazy because it always feels like my brain is short-circuiting a little bit. That said, I'm not in the painful phase yet. So I think I can get through this. I just, you know, let me know if I start just mumbling nonsense, you know?
Well, I will do my best to walk you through and hold your hand through our experience today. So just hang in there, hang tight.
Thank you.
We do have quite a doozy of an episode of Potomac to get into. It is the aftermath of the altercation. It's the conversation at Karen. So we've got a bit to break down there, but I think we'll do a pretty good job.
Thankfully, I took extensive notes while watching. So as long as I can try to read them, you know, it's fine.
Okay, good. And we're also going to talk about Below Deck Med. The season is wrapping up. We are, you know, almost at the finale. Things are really coming to a head between Jess and Rob. I mean, we have a lot to break down there too. And we'll do a little bit of a discussion on Bravo's chat room because there were some really fun moments from this week's episodes that I think are going to be fun to talk about.
Also, big news, Real Housewives of Potomac after show launched.
Yes, it comes out every Sunday at 10, 9 central on BravoTV.com and Bravo's YouTube channel. We're also going to continue to share those episodes as podcasts as well as we've done with other after shows. And you guys may recognize a familiar voice in them. I'm just saying, like, keep your ears open.
Was it so fun to do this?
It was. It was really such a good time. It was really great to get to work with the ladies in such a direct way. And I'm telling you, they gave their all to this after show. And it was incredible to see them talk about these moments and to help them, you know, open up about some of the things that they've been through this season, especially because it was so long ago. So trying to bring them back to those moments and really get them to discuss these situations that they were in and how they felt at the time, they did an incredible job. So you guys are going
to
love it.
I also wanted to mention that we're going to be releasing our interview with Bravo exec Erica Forstadt as a bonus episode next week. She answers every question you ever wanted answered about Real Housewives of Beverly Hills season 10, including casting rumors for next season. Plus, there's a preview of Erica's interview in the description.
I am so excited to hear about her addressing the casting rumors. One thing that at least we can say is that Andy basically shut down the rumors that Caitlyn Jenner and who was it? Sophia someone else will not be joining the cast.
Sophia Caitlyn's girlfriend?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I knew it was Caitlyn, but I was like, well, I didn't believe it when I heard those rumors. But there are rumors all the time, and sometimes where there's smoke, there's fire. So I was glad that Andy, you know, confronted that one head on and shut it down.
Should we get into Potomac?
Yes.
All right. I know. Because, see, we've had the altercation, but now we have to deal with the aftermath. And I feel like that's what this entire episode was, is, you know, seeing how Candace is doing, how Monique is processing, and then all of the other ladies, like, how are they feeling about it? Thoughts?
Well, you know, my first thought as I watched this episode in particular was, what were the conversations like with producers at this point? Because I think we check in with the women about 5 days after the altercation is when a lot of, you know, the scenes in this episode are begin. So I can just imagine what producers must be thinking. And that's something we get into in the after show as well. We talked to Kamar and Josh, who I think everyone has heard on the podcast at this point. But I can just imagine what the women must have been saying to producers. Like, where do we go from here? Must have been the mentality of everybody involved at this point. So just to think about that dynamic and how everyone in this moment decided to move forward must have been just a really interesting and difficult conversation to have.
I wanted to know, do you think it's fair, Candace's reaction to Karen saying, you know, I want us to get together and hear Monique out? You know, Candace was very upset by that.
You know, I can see why Candace in particular would feel upset about that, because when you are the victim of that kind of attack or that kind of altercation, you kind of want people to be on your side, right? So Candace is probably thinking, why is anybody trying to give Monique an opportunity to explain herself. When everyone saw what happened, everyone was right there. They know that I was not the one to start it. And, you know, from her perspective, I get it. But I really do relate to Karen a lot in this episode, in the fact that she kind of feels in between and she sees both sides but doesn't want to take a side. Like, I kind of understand that, because everyone else has been really quick to jump, right, as to whose side they're on. But Karen is trying to step back and look at it like, these are two people that I care about. I need to give grace to Monique, and I need to keep you, Candace, in the loop as to what I'm doing, because I respect you as a friend. So I get what Karen's doing. I understand why Candace might be upset by it, but I think in a lot of ways, it's the right thing for Karen to do.
Yeah, I think I feel both ways too, because as Candace, I relate, you know, if I get a paper cut, I want a friend who's going to like fuck that piece of paper up for me, you know, like it could be the slightest thing. I want my friend to 1000% be on my side. However, when you're dealing with a close friend group where everyone is, you know, together all the time, it gets more tricky.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, none of this is an easy space to navigate for anyone involved, no matter who is responsible or who is the one to blame, who has the most guilt. This is a really difficult conversation to have. So it's just, it's hard to really determine what's the right answer and what's the wrong one, right? Like, we can say that Monique's actions were wrong, but this aftermath situation that they have found themselves in, it's really hard to navigate this space and be kind of balanced.
I don't know how I feel about the fact that Monique says she doesn't remember what happened.
I completely blacked out. You blacked out. The last thing I remember is one of the producers in my ear yelling, Monique, let go.
You know, and I recognize that I just don't struggle with that issue. You know, the only time I've ever not remembered something was, you know, because I drank too much. I've never been in a state of anger that took me to a place of, you know, blacking out, which I've heard some people go through. But it just, for me, doesn't add up, because if Monique says that the last thing that she remembers, or that she remembers tugging on her hair, and then fast forward, she remembers a producer, you know, saying, let her go or whatever. Well, how do you explain the running outside and being stopped by a producer again from getting to Candace?
Right. Yeah. I mean, what's interesting is that I feel like rage almost operates in the same way as, you know, other influences might in your life, where it impairs your judgment and your ability to recall proper information. And that includes how to react to a situation. And it's been repressed for a long time. And there is a lot of stuff that she is sitting on that she hasn't dealt with properly. And also, in turn, has not had the proper conversations with the women, including Candace, to unleash some of this pent up anger that she has. So I kind of understand why maybe she is like, I remember this, but I don't remember that. It comes back to me in bits and pieces, because she's dealing with some kind of, I think, deep-rooted issues. She went through a miscarriage. She had a difficulty with her pregnancy with Chase. I mean, I think there's just a lot on Monique's plate.
It's interesting to me how focused Robin and Giselle are, well, and Wendy too, on this tweet that Monique sent out afterward, ask and you shall receive.
Read it aloud. Ask and you shall receive.
And I know that they think that, you know, that's her trying to be cute, trying to be proud of her actions. And I think, you know, to some extent that's correct. But I also think she's just making a stamp, like marking this moment to say that this person continually taunted me and asked me to put my hands on her. And I did. So it's almost like a little bit of trying to get ahead of the narrative, and I think, and being like, she did literally ask me to, you know, maybe I shouldn't have,
right?
But she did ask me to.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's interesting too, because that tweet times with the release of this story onto the internet, and it's all over the blogs, and it forces these women to sort of question, like, Monique, what was your involvement in this information going public? And in the after show, Monique actually talks about how a few days after the incident, she spoke with her family and some family friends about what happened. And at this point, she now knows exactly which family friend it was who leaked the information to the blog. So it's why it sounded more one-sided, like on Monique's side, but it wasn't her in particular. It wasn't her like sending her minions out there into the world to do that. But apparently it was a family friend and she only just found out who it was this past February. So months and months after the incident happened last October. You know, whether that's true or not is, I guess, up for debate, because we see Robin very quickly stepping in with this like savage, you know, well, you almost had me. And I was just like, oh, damn, like Robin is not buying this at all for one second. And I can understand a little bit as to why. But also, if you're going to walk into that room with the decision already made that you think Monique is going to be lying, then there's really no room for the conversation to go forward.
I completely agree. That wasn't to have a conversation. That was to basically tell Monique, you can't be friends with us, you know?
Yeah. Well, I want to go back to Giselle showing up with a security guard, KB, while we see Ashley showing up with baby Dean. So it's this major contrast between how these two people are approaching this situation. What did you think when you saw KB walk in with Giselle?
I guess to me, there's a disconnect because I'm like, either this is a very serious situation that you're very upset about, or it's something that we can all laugh at a little bit and make a joke.
Right.
She didn't like, right. Like she didn't actually bring KB because she thought something was going to go down. She's doing it to make a point, which is kind of a lighthearted joke. Like it's a gag, you know, that's the part that I don't like. Like I have to say, I love Giselle, but I haven't really been happy with the way that she's handled all of this.
Yeah. Well, the other thing to consider is, and a lot of people have been talking about this after this episode, is Giselle saying that she has an image to protect.
Do me and Jamal, a pastor, have an image to protect? 100%. So hanging around someone who decides to fight women on national television, is that a good look? No.
And she talks about her relationship with Jamal.
Because she's a pastor's wife again.
Right. An international superstar pastor. But looking at the last episode where even her dad is caught in this hot mic moment where he does not think that Jamal really has an image worth protecting in so many ways, you know, it's a bit of a reach for Giselle to be like, I can't be associated with someone like Monique because of my situation with my relationship and all of that. Well, honey, like, look at the blogs, because what image are you protecting? I don't understand. It's kind of unfair, right?
Yeah. This isn't a pure game. It's there's skin in the game. And if someone else is having a bad season, chances are the heat is off you. And maybe it's a little bit beneficial for some of the other ladies to have Monique be in the hot seat this season so they can relax a little bit.
Right. And that's not very uncommon on Housewives, right? We've seen that on other shows, or at least that's been the theory from a lot of people on other shows, and why they drill so hard on one particular moment or one particular woman or what have you. But that kind of actually interestingly leads me to my next point, that this whole discussion about, you know, how Monique is making Black women look. My question is, are the women more concerned with how Monique makes Black women look or how she makes them look? Because I feel like there's a difference here. And there's a lot of people talking about,
right,
you know, the idea of respectability politics, that Monique shouldn't have to be responsible for the perception of all Black women. And there's an article actually out right now by Rachel Miller, who's a writer for Vice, that really dives into this a lot deeper. And I think it's pretty interesting. But I think it raises a really valuable point. Obviously, Monique should not have used violence in the way that she did, or attacked Candace in the way that she did. But are we then holding her to a different standard than they've been holding themselves to in some ways?
Well, yeah. Okay, the last thing I wanted to talk about, I don't know about you, but is, you know, watching Candace in therapy, you know, we're seeing it at the same time as we're seeing this encounter with Monique and the other ladies. You know, she's talking to our therapist. She's clearly very upset, but I just felt equally like there was no accountability. And, you know, her saying to her therapist, well, I thought we were sisters. I don't know what I did to warrant this kind of behavior. What? You know, like you don't think you played any sort of a part? Because he said, were your hands in her face? And she said, they were not. I talk with my hands. Go back and look at that moment. That's not someone who's just gesticulating like, you know, a normal person. She's been so overly dramatic with the hands, so close to Monique's face. You know, be honest with yourself. You were provoking her. Maybe you didn't think this is what the end result would be, but you can't rewrite history now.
Right. And it's of course, the end result should never have been what it was. But to your point, it's about taking responsibility for it. And, you know, at the end of the day, Candace did not deserve what happened to her, but she did know about the two rumors that were going around about Monique, as old as some of them may have been, whatever. And she knew about Charisse's contributions to at least one of the rumors. So there is some responsibility in how the two of them got to that place. But, you know, Candace obviously did not deserve to be attacked in that way. But it's just like you said, you can't rewrite history. You have to kind of look at the big picture and the whole story.
Well, and even the therapist said, he said, take the violence out for a second. Did you play a part in this? She says, no.
Do you think that you did anything to contribute to what happened?
To the physical part. No.
I just want you to think about it.
I have.
You have.
I have.
You have thought about it.
Yes. No.
The blog started writing about this altercation that people started coming after her on social media. Should we talk about last year and the nonstop barrage of, you know, mean tweets directed at Ashley?
Right. I mean, that's the thing, is there is a laundry list on both sides of actions that have led them to this point, or things that they have done to either each other or other people in the past that now they're trying to spin as like, well, I wouldn't do that, or like, I can't believe this is happening to me. It feels like this moment was almost a reset button, and now everything that happened prior to that is disregarded. And we're only moving forward with like that moment and what happened after that, which is a little bit like, well, we need a little bit more context, right? To figure out how we got to this point. And that involves Monique digging deep down and Candace digging deep down and just figuring out exactly what it was that went wrong and how it could have been prevented.
Yeah.
You know, and how they move forward. You know, it's just sort of like, I don't know how they move forward from this, or maybe it's over for them. I mean, it's such an unfortunate situation that the two of them have found themselves in, and that we've all found ourselves in. And, you know, it's really tough to try to pick a side in this situation, and it's something that I don't want to do. But I would love to, as we go forward in this season, be able to consider both perspectives. Because, you know, like I've said, I worked on the after show. I've heard from both of them. I interviewed both of them last week. You know, I do very much feel like Karen, and I feel in the middle, and I don't want to write anybody off for a single mistake that they have made, or for, you know, what they contributed to get to this point. So it's going to be a very interesting rest of the season.
Below Deck Med.
Oh my God, Below Deck Med. Megan, what do we do with Jess?
It's like, on one hand, I get it. I too struggle with jealousy sometimes, okay? Unlike Jess, I would never let the other girl see me sweat, ever. And maybe that's just a pride thing, but I just think in the end, it makes you look so insecure. And I'll give you an example that happened pretty recently.
Ooh, yes. I love examples.
Okay. So Andrew and I were staying at an Airbnb in Woodstock, and it was like on a horse farm. Beautiful. And he had sort of been talking to the owner of the of the place, you know, because you always do like a little check-in, like, hi, how are you? Here are the instructions for whatever.
Yeah, of course.
And he was kind of asking her things like, I know you have horses. My girlfriend loves horses. Could we see them? Blah, blah, blah. And then like there was like more chatting and I was like, this is a lot. Like, are you bothering this person? Cause that's just like a lot of chatting to be happening with the host. We ended up meeting her outside cause she was in the barn or whatever. So she was showing us around. She's really nice. She's like in her late 50s, I want to say. And you know, it was fun conversation. We say goodbye. He and I go back to the part of the farm we're staying and she starts texting him again and like does not stop.
What?
And at one point sends him a photo of her in a bikini in front of a waterfall and goes, my secret waterfall.
No.
And I said, what the fuck? This is so inappropriate. He's like, is it? Like, I don't. And I was like, Andrew, she's hitting on you. And then she kept texting. She goes, sorry if this is too much. I don't use social media, so it's just texting. And I was like, if you respond one more goddamn time, I'm going to be so upset. But I would never say to her or show her in any way, hey, back off. You know what I mean? Because then I just feel, what's the end result of that? It makes Andrew uncomfortable. It makes me look like I can't handle the fact that someone else is showing him attention. And it stopped after that. But I had gone through the scenario that if it didn't stop, I was going to, in the end, leave a review that was like, this woman wouldn't stop harassing my boyfriend.
Oh my God. That is wild. And honestly, for you to not react the way Jess did over that says a lot about who you are and your character. So props to you. Because like, for Jess to get to the degree in which she did over what was happening with him and Aisha, which was like not even a butt grab. It was like a barely touching and like raising over because his backpack was in the way. I mean, imagine if Aisha had been sending him pictures, like bikini pictures of like, this is me like in front of a waterfall, you know, like Jess would have lost her shit and probably killed Aisha on this boat. I mean, that is so wild. And, you know, maybe this woman, she's in her, you know, early 50s. She's been on this farm for a while. She hasn't seen any, cute city boys in a bit. So like everybody's got a story, right? Like, but still for her to go to those lengths.
Yeah.
Knowing that you were with him also, maybe she was looking for like a three-way action. I don't know. But that is really, really wild.
Again, I'm not even sure that it's that I'm like a better person. I just think I'm more prideful and I would never want to ever seem like I'm bothered by it. Like, flirt all you want. Like, it's fine. You know, he's not interested. So it's funny to see someone like Jess. Like, it just makes me shake my head. I'm like, Jess, don't be so insecure. Like, you just seem so insecure. And I thought Aisha handled it perfectly because she didn't fully give the whole, oh my God. Like she said, I'm sorry. But then when Jess continued and was just like, yeah, I just think it's mad disrespectful. She's like, well, for you, sure. Wouldn't be for me, but for you, sure.
Hey, I just want to get something off my chest though for a second.
Yeah.
Earlier when you guys were getting ready to leave and taking group photos, your hand went from like being on Rob's backpack down to grabbing his ass.
What?
Okay, whatever.
Are you serious? I don't remember touching his ass.
Yeah, it went from holding his backpack then down to like his butt.
Oh, sorry. It would have just made being stupid.
Yeah, I agree.
And it was interesting. The girls on Bravo chat room had a completely different take on this that I did not agree with.
I know. I thought that was interesting too, because at the end of the day, I think Aisha and Jess are two very different people and they may never understand each other. And that's okay. You know, they don't have to be friends. They have to work together. And, you know, obviously with Rob in the middle, it adds a layer of complication to the whole thing. But you know, Aisha last season, she saw Jack be so playful with everybody and she just thought it was fun and she was just there to have a good time. And she is very secure in who she is. And we've seen that in the way she just like is so unapologetic about the way she talks, the jokes she makes, how she interacts with other people. And that kind of confidence and that, you know, way she presents herself, I'm sure it can be intimidating to people who might be dealing with insecurities. And that's not to say that Jess doesn't have reasons to be that way, but it's just kind of like you're reaching a little bit. And, you know, at the end of the day, too, Rob is kind of a fuckboy. So whether Aisha is involved or not, his actions also contribute to the way things are going down between the two of them.
Yeah.
I want to point out, too, that I would like Bugsy's brother to join the show next season, because I don't know if you saw that pic. There was only like one or two that they flashed on the screen, but he's cute.
I don't even think I noticed. This is crazy for me to say. I think that your dick radar maybe even stronger than mine.
Wow.
Yeah.
That says something. I mean, but really, you look away for 1 second and they flash a picture across the screen. And by the time you look back, it's gone. So, you know.
Do they look alike? Because I can't imagine the male Bugsy.
They, like, look like siblings. But he has, I mean, because Bugsy is very pretty. And he has, like, a very pretty look as well. You know, like, he's a little bit more of a pretty boy than I would say, like, a handsome guy. But everyone in her family, both of her siblings are also, you know, yachty people. So bring them on. Bring them all on. Let's make it a family affair.
Just reminds me of the Jessica Simpson song. I don't know if I can sing it for legal reasons, but thinking
right,
about
right.
It.
you can hum it, maybe. I want to talk about the silent disco also, because here's the thing. If I were to book a yacht for this extravagant vacation I wanted to go on in Spain, I think I would request an actual DJ and like a full-blown club on the boat as opposed to a pajama party silent disco. I mean, different strokes for different folks, but why do a silent disco when you're on a luxury yacht?
You know what's so funny? The thing I kept thinking was like, thick PJs and dancing does not sound good, because a lot of sweat just being trapped in there, you know?
That's true. It's hot there.
But I agree. Like, having an actual DJ on board would be so much better.
And also, what's the deal with the snacks? I mean, I love snacking. Don't get me wrong. But these guests and that one in particular seem to be very into like the in-between moments of like, I need cucumbers, I need this, I need that. Like, where are my nachos? Like, I need some stuff in between the meals.
I see, like, I feel like I relate to that, because I feel like when I'm on vacation, and let's say like you're at some like all-inclusive resort, it's nachos at 3 p.m. It's pizza at, you know, 11 p.m. It's whatever you want, whenever you want.
That's true.
And so on a yacht, like if you can just, you're just able to be like, hey, I want this now. Oh, amazing. I think it would take such full advantage of that.
Right. No, I guess that's true from like the charter guest perspective. But I guess I'm just thinking of it more along the lines of from the cruise perspective where,
of course,
you know, like why, like, shouldn't Tom maybe be preparing snacks when he knows
true.
They're going off the boat? Like, shouldn't there be something in the fridge and then he doesn't have to freak out when they come and ask for cucumbers? I mean, I think in a lot of ways, and something that Bugsy is good at, is anticipating the guest's needs before they ask for it. Because if you are trying to give them that high quality luxury experience that they are paying for, then you need to be ready at all times. And if you want to have that time to take your break or whatever, at least get something ready for when they return or when they may ask.
Also, here's the thought about the food. If the chef isn't going to pay attention to the preference sheet, why not simplify things and tell everyone the menu ahead of dinner? Why does it have to be a surprise? That way, when he says, we're having Wagyu for dinner, someone can be like, I don't eat beef. And he can be like, oh, okay. I just don't, it just seems so disorganized. Do you know what I mean? To have to make all these last minute adjustments. Why not just ask them what they want to eat?
It defeats the purpose of these preference sheets if he's not referencing them. I mean, they're to help you. You have a meeting before they get on board where you review these preference sheets. You learn everything you need to know about them before every meal, at the start of every day, whatever you need to do, build it into your routine to check that. And if it's as simple as they order a Caesar salad and they don't want bacon on it because it says on their preference sheet they don't like bacon, then you need to know that. That is your job to know that.
Chicken Caesar salad. bacon on there?
I think it is.
You don't eat bacon?
No.
So I've got guac and salsa, and nachos are coming now.
Quick question, is this bacon on there?
I think it might be.
Okay.
Do you not want that? No?
No.
Okay, I'll get him to make another one for you.
Okay, thanks. No.
Also, since when does Caesar salad even come with bacon? That's a Cobb salad.
Oh, that's a good point. I didn't even think of that.
Ay, ay, ay.
I don't eat a lot of Caesar salad. It's like, isn't there?
Oh, I do.
Aren't there anchovies in the dressing or something?
Yeah, but sometimes it's very light.
Ugh. I can't. I won't with anchovies. I like don't understand them. I'm like, they're little fish. I don't get it. Why? I cannot. So on Bravo's chat room this week, one thing that I thought was really funny is that Kate was asking the group for dating advice, and she ended up having her text messages from this guy read aloud by Giselle. But if you guys remember, this was the same guy that Kate brought up on our show a few months ago. This guy that like reached out to her at the beginning of COVID, beginning of the whole quarantine situation. He like thought he had COVID, but like still wanted to come visit her in Florida. And it was like all very strange. And he just seemed like super weird. Then he totally ghosted her. And then all of a sudden, months and months later, hits her up again being like, where's my invitation to Florida?
Happy Sunday, felt like I had the flu, and then got an email that someone in my building had COVID. Called my doctor, he said I probably have it. Anyways, I could really use a beach vacation soon. Would love to come visit you, maybe next week? Question mark.
I mean, okay, I have to ask if you do this. I need to know if it's just a straight man thing or it's just a man thing. But this idea of months later sending a text that's like, hey, stranger.
No, that's not a thing. That shouldn't be a thing.
That is such a thing, though, especially in quarantine. Do you know how many of those I've gotten?
How many?
A lot. Just guys who saw that I split with Aaron and just like resurrected conversations that we haven't had in months.
That's so...
Oh, hey, just checking in. It's like, no, you're not. We're not friends. What are you talking about? What?
I feel like with, you know, gay men, generally speaking, it's once it's over, it's over. Like, it's done. It's signed, sealed, delivered. Whether I ghosted you, you ghosted me, whatever the circumstances were, when it's done, it's like, we are not revisiting. Like, there's too many fish in the sea. Why would we bother going back to somebody like that who 6 months ago, like randomly invited us to Florida. And now 6 months later, we're like, oh, where's my invitation? Like, I don't think so. That's not going to happen.
No, not going to happen.
I wonder if he's just like younger and just like doesn't have it together and like realizes Kate's back on a TV show and is like, ooh, maybe this will be my 15 minutes.
But I'm also thinking that maybe COVID is just doing weird things to the dating world where it's like the pool that once was so large is a lot smaller because people aren't willing to go out, you know?
That's true. That's true. But like after all this time, did he really think Kate would be like, absolutely, come visit? Like, no. And the best part too was on the episode, Giselle read his text messages aloud and she put on this like really deep, ridiculous voice. And Portia was like, you sound like Bubba Gump.
Can I ask a question? Is she, Kate, were you dating Bubba Gump?
Yeah. Were you dating Bubba Gump?
I mean, maybe she was. Who knows? Okay, wait. Another thing that came up on chat room that I need your perspective on is Hannah revealed that Rob from Below Deck Med messaged her on a dating app during quarantine and she never answered him. But I guess he went on Watch What Happens Live and hinted like, oh yeah, we've been talking and we just don't have a connection. But Hannah has the receipts of like, I never responded to him.
Rob messaged me during quarantine on a dating app and I didn't respond. I just didn't respond.
Quarantine, wasn't that's he not tea. With her?
Is that tea? Oh, her. That's not the tea.
Oh, what's the tea?
He goes on Watch What Happens Live and Andy Cohen says, do you know Hannah Burner? And do you have like a connection with her? He goes, we've been talking and there's no connection. We have not been talking, honey.
Sir.
No one spoke to you ever. Okay. No one will.
I was surprised that he would even be interested in Hannah. Don't get me wrong. I think Hannah is super pretty. It's just that she doesn't seem like his type. personality-wise or physically, you know?
Right, right. I mean, the thing about Hannah is she's just kind of like carefree, fun, just like having a good time. And he seems like he's looking for some kind of profound, spiritual, deep-rooted connection. But at least maybe right. That's more so his gimmick. Like, that's his way of getting women. And I think Hannah would see through that in a second.
But yeah, it's odd that he would just completely lie and say that they've been talking when they haven't been.
I mean, I guess he's holding on to his 15 minutes too. He's like, oh no, I have a connection to this other person on Bravo. Look.
So weird.
It's so rude. Okay, let's do Rose and Thorn because I think we have some more Bravo chat room in our Rose and Thorn.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, let's do Rose and Thorn.
Okay, what was your rose?
So my rose from Bravo chat room is that Hannah announced that this guy she just told us last week she was dating, she's moving in with him. And, you know, all the ladies are shocked and they think it's too soon. And I just have to say I totally relate to her because, you know what, the world is burning. And, you know, you just, when you feel it, you feel it. You got to make moves.
Well, I decided to move in with my boyfriend who I just met because why not? The world is burning. Why not? We don't have time.
Right, right. Well, that's the thing is now is the time more than ever to take chances, right? Because I think we're all starting to realize that life is short, things are uncertain, just if you feel something, go with it, right? I mean, why not?
Yeah, I mean, yes. Could it end horribly for me and Hannah? Sure. But who has time to think like that?
I mean, listen, if it does, then the two of you can just move in together.
True. And oh my really God, cool. That is a great app. It matches people who just jumped into things way too quickly during quarantine and like, help, I now need someone to help me pick up the pieces. Will you move in with me?
It could be called like Oops, you know? Like,
yeah.
I think we're onto something here. I'm going to hit up Hannah after this and see if she's interested and we can all go in on business together.
Love it.
Well, my rose was also from Bravo's chat room and it was Portia's take on the altercation between Monique and Candace because she had a very insightful and balanced interpretation of what went down. I mean, we mentioned it last week, how Portia has been through something similar with Kenya in the past. You know, there has been these type of physical altercations on our shows in the past. And it's sort of the way you deal with it afterwards, but also how you got to that point. And I think Portia had some really good perspective on the whole thing. So I suggest everyone check that out. Cause I think more than anyone else analyzing this situation, she knows what she's talking about.
Wendy put a lot on Monique's back. I mean, I understand the stereotype of Black women, et cetera. But you know, on the shows that we're on, we're all living real life and nobody's perfect. And we all do crazy stuff. We curse, we fuss, we go low, we go high. And I just think it's hard to judge someone off of one situation.
Right. You know, one part that I love that she said, it was something that I had sort of felt, but like, I don't think it's my place to say, but she said, you know, it's unfair that Wendy is putting the weight of all of these stereotypes of Black women on the shoulders of Monique. That's too much responsibility to put on one person, you know? It doesn't change the fact that she's human and makes errors.
100%. Okay, what was your thorn?
My thorn was from Potomac. I just was very upset when everyone shut Ashley down when she was at Karen's and said, look, are we holding men to the same standard that we're holding Monique to or women to? And they just shut that down so quickly. And I felt like, as you had mentioned earlier, they're not listening. Like, it's not a conversation. They just wanted to talk. And I felt it was unfair to not let Ashley have a perspective, to give her that platform to speak.
This is an awful role model for Black women, for her daughter.
Do we hold men to the same standard? Do we say the same thing?
This is a representation of a father.
It doesn't mean that we should say she's being a bad role model for her daughter.
Yes, she is.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, they write her off very quickly because they're like, well, you didn't see it. You don't know what happened. But that doesn't mean she can't have a perspective on it and she can't share her perspective. And it shouldn't at least be validated
exactly.
As, well, thank you for that contribution, Ashley. And here's what I think about that. You know, I mean, it's like, just let her have her opinion. It's that's the whole point of that reunion, right? I mean, is to get everybody's opinion out there and to hear from Monique, whatever. But yeah, I agree. Well, my thorn is also from Bravo's chat room, and it is the discussion that the ladies had about the presidential debate. It is my thorn only because it didn't make the full episode, and it's actually published on BravoTV.com as an unseen moment. You know, obviously not all the segments they film are going to make it, but I do really like the conversations that the women are having on this show, and I think it's really helping people see things in a different light or you know, hear from everybody about their different perspectives on things. And I think this particular moment, I wish had been a part of it. So check it out on BravoTV.com if you want to have a look. But I think it's worth watching.
So next week, we'll be back with an all new episode, plus a bonus episode with a Bravo exec.
We all have our favorite movies and our own opinions on cult classics.
Take a personal favorite of mine, Sister Act 2, Back in the Habit. Flawless. Iconic, amazing. Oddly enough, critics didn't love it, but audiences do, myself included.
It has the perfect 90s trifecta of Whoopi Goldberg, Jennifer Love Hewitt, and of course, Lauryn Hill, not to mention Kathy Najimy and Dame Maggie Smith. Honestly, what's not to love?
Don't agree with the tomato meter? Neither do the folks at the new podcast Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong. Sometimes.
This podcast is diving deep and settling the score on the movies and TV shows you keep saying Rotten Tomatoes got wrong.
Join hosts Jacqueline Coley, Mark Ellis, and Tim Ryan as they discuss some of the most beloved and despised movies and TV shows ever made and address the statement they hear a lot from fans, Rotten Tomatoes is wrong.
Their latest episode is all about Sister Act 2 and its initial critical reception. Clearly ahead of its time. Whoopi Goldberg was, and still is, a megastar in the early 90s, and the sequel is so different from the first. So why do critics act like it was a rehash of the first movie?
Listen to this episode and more from Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong, wherever you get your podcasts. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 9. And remember, watching Bravo isn't a guilty pleasure.
It's self-care.
Guys, let's keep the conversation going. We want to talk to you all week long. You can find us on Instagram at Bravo Daily Dish.
And on Twitter at Bravo TV. Just don't forget to use the hashtag Bravo Daily Dish.
Or reach out to us personally. I'm everywhere at Meg Segura.
And I'm everywhere at Eric J. Mack. That's E-R-I-K.
And if you're on Facebook, join the Daily Dish Facebook group.
You can post about what you're watching, your favorite shows, who's your favorite housewife, ask a question, start some drama. There's a lot of good stuff in there, so check it out.
You can also learn more about the podcast at BravoTV.com.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Looking fine, and I got my girls with me. With the boys at the table getting tipsy, miss me, kiss.